Blog Talk Radio.
6 Degrees is another fine show brought to you by Law of Attraction Radio Network. It has been discovered that we are all connected by just 6 degrees of separation. Somehow, some way, we just need to open up the dialogue to see where our connections lie. Welcome to the 6 Degrees Show with your host, Anthony Bryce.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, and good night. This is Anthony Bryce, the host of 6 Degrees. 6 Degrees is about connecting, and we are all connected, somehow, some way, through the dialogue. The essential connections are revealed, and today, for the first time on 6 Degrees, we have Brant Secunda and Mark Allen. Brant Secunda is a shaman healer in the Huichol tradition of Mexico. He completed a 12-year apprenticeship with the legendary Huichol shaman Don Jose Matsua. Brant is the director of the Dance of the Deer Foundation Center for Shamanic Studies and teaches seminars and retreats worldwide. And Mark Allen is a 6-time Ironman triathlon world champion. He was named Triathlete of the Year 6 times by Triathlete Magazine and called the world's fittest man by Outside Magazine. Mark's final victory in 1995 at age 37 makes him the oldest men's champion in the history of the race. Mark attributes his Ironman dominance to Brant's teaching, ceremonies, and healing. Mark continues to study with Brant to this day. World. This is Brant Secunda and Mark Allen. Mark Allen, this is Brant Secunda. This is the world on 6 Degrees. How are you today?
Great. Thank you. We're happy to be visiting with you.
Great to be speaking to the whole world. That's fantastic.
And it is. Before we get into our dialogue, Mark and Brant, could you direct the listeners to your website so they can dig in a little deeper into your rabbit holes?
Of course. If you go to fitsoulfitbody.com, that's our website, and that gives a lot of great information about our book. Also, there's an online fitness quiz, if you want to call it a fitness quiz, where people get to test their overall wellness. It's a really unique quiz, and it's great. It's fun to take. Also, you can go to shamanism.com, which is where Brant reveals a lot of, actually it's danceofthedeer.com now, and he reveals all of his scheduling for the year. He leads retreats all over the world, and that's a fantastic resource for anybody who wants to delve a little bit deeper into shamanism.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for those websites. Right now, We're in wintertime, and you know, as we speak, there's the biggest winter storm of the year about to. It's just going on right now, and you know, I know there's a lot of depressed people out there, stressed out, anxious. Is there anything that you can tell these people to help them through these times?
Well, that's one thing to tell them is that they're not alone. There are many people in many different societies and indigenous cultures worldwide that feel affected when winter comes and affected by the darkness of winter and by, you might say, the winter blues. And so this is natural that nature is sleeping, nature is somewhat dormant during winter time. And so people naturally will also be a little bit more introverted and a little bit more introspective at this time, going inside of themselves, which sometimes can be difficult. And so what we like to tell people in our book, Fit Soul, Fit Body, and what we talk about in our workshops as well, is that there are many different exercises that people can do, like going to sit just by running water and breathing that sound of running water into the heart and into the soul will help uplift somebody's feelings for themselves and for their world around them. Or they can go listen to the sound of the Gulf where you are right now, they can listen to the sound of the ocean and just let that sound vibrate into their bodies and affect them in a positive way, which can bring hope and vision to one's life.
You know, at many times at workshops that Brant would lead, I've studied with him for 20 years now, he would tell us in the wintertime, he said that we have this inner light and to look inside and try and find that light inside. And that has helped me through so many times in the winter where I just don't feel motivated, or maybe I feel a little out of sync. And by realizing, yeah, everything is inside, including that inner light that I can draw strength from, then it really does lift me up, and it's really, in 1 second, it can shift your attitude and your focus.
That really is the key, isn't it? It's going inside, because that's where everything truly is. You know, it's like singing in the rain, you know. You can either, you know, it's choice in the moment. You can sing in the, if I go outside right now, I can say, oh, that rain feels so good on my skin, or I can go outside and go, ooh, you know. So it really is about choice in the moment, isn't it?
You know, that's kind of like when I was racing. You could either look at it as this painful experience that was just a challenge, like, why am I even out here? Or in the next moment, even though you might feel that at times during a tough race, you can shift it and go, wow, how lucky am I? I'm out here. I'm moving my body. I put myself here. I made the choice to be here. And because of the challenge, I'm finding parts of myself that I didn't even know existed before. And that's a lot of the themes that we talk about in Fit Soul, Fit Body is finding those areas inside yourself that really are there always, but maybe just a little bit dormant. And the wintertime is the perfect time to go inside and just try and look and say, hey, what's in there that I've never seen before? What can I find in there that I can use later in the year and throughout the rest of my life?
Mm. You know, I'm feeling this to be a relationship, you know, the foundation of relationship, not just with self, but with true, authentic self. And Brant, this question really is for both of you. In your book, Fit Soul and Fit Body, 9 Keys to a Healthier, Happier You, you know, Brant, your journey I found to be absolutely, both of your journeys are absolutely incredible. However, I just, if you would, let the listeners know, you know, how did an 18-year-old from the East Coast of the U.S. end up as a world-renowned bridge between two world cultures?
Well, I used to ask that to my adoptive grandfather, Don Jose, and he would kind of shrug and go, well, that was your good luck. And he would kind of chuckle. But the way it happened was I left soon after my 18th birthday from the East Coast in the United States, and I traveled across America and eventually wound up in Mexico up in the Sierra Madre Mountains, where the Huichols found me there. It was a 5-day walk through the Sierra to get to the village where I was going to. And I was soon after taken to the village of Don Jose Matsua, who was already quite elderly at the time, an old shaman, you might say. And he adopted me and put me through a 12-year apprenticeship with him, which involved planting corn, the 5 colors of corn, and gathering firewood, and very normal activities like that. But also, he took me to many of the sacred places of power, the sacred caves and the mountain where the sun was born. And in this way, little by little, I was trained by Don Jose in an apprenticeship, which helped bring me to where I am today.
Luck. You know, it's deeper. I really feel it's deeper than that. It's destiny, because it's been told that the shamans, Don Jose, had actually had a dream of you before you arrived.
Yes, he did. He had a dream and a vision that I would come there, and that's how I was found there in the Sierra Madre. And then through his vision, he put me through a very arduous apprenticeship. And he always said that this was the vision of the great spirit, and that this was my destiny, as you said.
Yes, you know, you really can't hide from that, you know, is what my grandmother would tell me. You can't hide from your destiny. Your work is about the soul and the Hui Chol. Am I saying that right, Hui Chol?
Perfect, yeah, Hui Chol.
Hui, say again?
Hui Chol.
Oh, Hui Chol, I like that, Hui Chol. The Hui Chol people, you know, I found they have no history of war, and they train the hearts to open to the healing power of love. It's incredible.
It is. It is. So they put all of their efforts to mystical endeavors and to just learning to live in harmony with their environment, learning to live in harmony with the spiritual world of nature. And I think it's because of this that they are still surviving today and are still trying to maintain their ancient culture and their ancient traditions. Because, as we know, everyone who fought the Spanish really didn't do so well.
The University of Attraction. Where else can you take free, interactive courses from international scientists, medical doctors, spiritual leaders, and experts in the field of the Law of Attraction? At the university, you will have your personal questions answered, enhance your intuitive skills, communicate with the angels, fill your life with music, and free meditation and hypnosis downloads. Sign up today. Go to loaradionetwork.com and click on the University of Attraction. The doors are wide open, waiting for you now.
Hello, this is Constance Arnold, author and certified dream coach. Join me beginning January 26th for 4 weeks as I share with you how to make your dreams come true in 2011. You know, during my career, I have helped over 10,000 clients begin to live the life of their dreams. I will teach you how to develop strategies and projects that will move you towards your dream, utilizing a simple, easy, effective process for rapid change. You will learn how to identify and eliminate those limiting beliefs that have been holding you back from the life that you deserve. This is your opportunity to jump into the driver's seat and take control of your life. So register today at the University of Attraction and begin the first steps toward making your dreams come true.
Brant, I know that your work with Mark transformed Mark's life to be the 6-time world triathlete champion. I mean, just to say world triathlete, just to say finishing a triathlon is incredible. But to be the world champion 6 times is just, it's just historic. It is historic, and it's a signature, and there's an essence there that in a story that has to be told to the audience. Would you please?
Well, I met Brant halfway through my triathlon career. The first 6 years that I had tried to do well at the Ironman to be the world champion, I came up short. You know, I could get second, I could get third, I could get fifth, but I couldn't get first place. And, you know, I had all the numbers in the logbook. I had all the physical markers that said, you can do this. But when the gun goes off, it has nothing to do with the numbers in your logbook. It has to do with who you are as a person. It has to do with your inner character and strength. It has to do with your ability to either let yourself get derailed by negative thoughts or to quiet your mind and find yourself in that center of power that comes from being, feeling like you are connected to all of life and to that big island of Hawaii where you're racing. It's a very intense environment to race on. And so in 1989, I made the very first connection with Brant and with Don Jose and the Hui Chol tradition. And it was like a light switch. You know, I just felt like something that had been missing my whole life, not even just in triathlon, but in my life in general, I had found. And it was this sense that life is just good, that being alive is something that's a fantastic miracle to have. And when that's your starting point for doing something challenging, you've already won. You're already a champion. If your life is a magical event, if you have that experience, and I had that with Brandt, and so it was a true transformation of sort of that inner character. And then from there, I was able to race with a greater sense of peace, and also, I guess you'd say, a sense of purpose that had really not so much to do with winning, but just going out there to show the best that a human being could be on that kind of a day, or the best that I could be on a day like that that's so challenging.
Oh, wow. As you were speaking, it went from action to stillness, which was the key to transformation. You know, it's not about the movement. It's about the being, and the state of being. Really, there is no movement, is there?
No, and that's why we decided to name the book Fit Soul, Fit Body. We tossed it back and forth for a long time. Should it be Fit Body, Fit Soul, Fit Soul, Fit Body? And, you know, we both agreed that all change, everything starts from the inside. Deep change starts from the inside. Starts with the soul of the person and their approach to life and their focus, their purpose. And so that's where we start in the book, is helping people kind of clear away negative emotions that might have held them back in the past, or dealing with stress as a way to calm your whole life down, so that then you can say, okay, now where do I really want to go, and who do I really want to be and to become that?
I like that. And that's really, really a crucial aspect, because you used that word become. And before that, there was vision. So I guess you want to be that which you want to come to you.
Mm.
You know, let's begin by transforming the word fitness itself, would you?
That's a great question. I mean, fitness, from our perspective, means being fit, in tune with the world of nature. And so that is so appropriate now. You see so many people dealing with what many are calling the wintertime blues, and how in my training with the We Chosen, throughout the world with indigenous cultures, people work on healing their moods during wintertime by connecting with nature, by looking inside of their heart, by drawing in the powers of nature inside of their heart or inside of their soul as a way to take away the wintertime blues, or take away depression by going and listening to the ocean, or taking away stress or being anxious or even fatigued by connecting with nature, by connecting with the spiritual world that surrounds everybody.
You know, Mark, there were times that you were told by traditional Westerners, Western healers, that you couldn't even race again, let alone win another race. However, Brandt comes along and shows you different. Could you?
Well, Brandt is an amazing healer and ceremonial leader. I've seen him bring the rain during droughts. You know, I mean, all the stuff that's fodder for amazing movies that's happening in real life and right in front of us. It's totally incredible. But as far as, you know, healing my physical body, that was something that I had to ask him to do many times, because, you know, I was an athlete who was trying to find that absolute point of peak fitness where you're basically one step away from getting injured. You know, and I always say that the harder you push your body, the better shape you get in, but also the closer you're coming to being out of balance and perhaps injured. So sometimes I didn't judge it right. I didn't gauge it right. And there were several Ironmans that I won, three of them specifically, where leading up to the race, something would happen, and, you know, I would get an analysis by a Western practitioner, and they would say, well, you've got to rest for 6 weeks. There's no way that you can go do the Ironman. And I go, forget it. I got to go win a world championship in 6 weeks. What do you mean stop training? And Brandt, every single time Brandt would do healings on me, and my body would come back around. And, you know, a lot of times all of my competitors knew that I had done something that was probably a little bit stupid in my training and that I was injured and that I didn't have a chance to be, maybe even showing up at the race. And when I would beat them, they would just shake their heads going, how did he do that? And, you know, every single one of them knew that I studied with Brand and that he did some amazing healings on me. And people would ask, well, why didn't they all come and study with him also? And the answer I always give is that I think on some level they knew that if they studied with a great teacher like Brandt, that it would require them to change deep things inside themselves that they're afraid to change.
But I think Mark has to also remember that he also had to do thousands and thousands of hours of training that also complemented the work that we did together. And also, I'd like to go back to your question about fitness, to define fitness. And from our perspective, fitness also has to do with just living your life in balance, living your life in harmony with the natural world. And when we do that, we are naturally fit. And that's something important, I think, that your listeners should always remember, that fitness has to do with living in harmony, living in balance. And when we do that, we are naturally more fit than if we did not try to find our place in nature.
You know, Mark, you talked about how Brandt would turn you around from a point of the Western practitioner saying you couldn't to actually winning the championship, and that process takes a lot of introspection. The strength to face the truth. It's the strength to face the truth. Where do you get that?
Well, I just know that not facing the truth is actually harder. You know, initially sometimes facing the truth, you know, I have fear, let's say. To face the truth that I do have fear about a race or a competitor or a situation in my life, you know, acknowledging that is sort of like the first step in somebody who's addicted to drugs or addicted to alcohol saying, I have a problem here. There's something that's holding me back. And that's something that Brandt always emphasized and that we talk about in the book a lot, is that you can have fear, let's say, but it doesn't have to hold you back. And that's a big transformational pivotal point when you can get to that and say, I do have this, but you know what? I'm going to give it everything I have anyway.
Go beyond it.
Yeah, I'm going to go beyond it and just see what is beyond that fear. Maybe there's success. Maybe I'll flop and land flat on my face, but who cares?
And you can still have fear and still be fearless. And that's something that we also talk about in the book.
So how do you be fearless in the face of your fears?
Well, for an example, Mark would certainly be a little bit afraid of the race in Hawaii, and that's a normal emotion, you know, going to one of the harshest environments and knowing you're going to have to undergo an incredible race for 8 hours or more. And so you go with that fear or that knowledge that, hey, there is something here that's going to really be incredibly challenging, but you still go through the race. You don't give up before you start. You accept the challenge and you do the best that you can. And in Mark's case, he turned out to be the greatest triathlete of all time because he was willing to face his fears, to face that challenge, and not to let the challenge of a race as arduous as the Ironman to bring him down. But it brought him to victory, as you know, 6 times.
These are concepts that we can all practice every single day. You know, you can feel yourself sometimes when you're starting to approach just a little situation that might maybe cause you a little bit of fear, and you can feel yourself hold yourself back. And you have that choice in that moment to say, wait a minute, you know, I can have that conversation with the person that might be tough. I can deal with somebody that I don't feel is treating me fairly or equally. You know, you can just take any little situation and over and over and over, if we practice it, then we see, maybe it still doesn't turn out the way you hope, but you approach it and you have a different experience with it. And then we can use those memories to really propel us forward in the big times when there are big challenges that certainly would hold anybody back if they let the fear get in the way.
And we talked about this in the book as well, how you go through certain fears, or you might have jealousy, or you might have anger, which I think most of your listeners, if we asked everyone, they would admit that they've had some anger in their life or some fear in their life or some jealousy. And so we talk about going into the Nirika, the doorway of the heart that connects us to all of creation. And we say, let these, what we might say, negative emotions go so that we can go through them in a positive way rather than a negative way.
Well, thank you so much for sharing. That's, I really am honored to have both of you on this show and exchanging this dialogue for the value creation of the listeners out there around the world.
Thank you for having us.
Yes. Brant, I know it's not yours. The work that you do, the blessings that you receive from Don Jose, they're all shamanism, correct?
Yes, you could say that.
Okay. Now, I noticed that it's based on life being a cycle of connection by way of ritual and devotional exercises to Tatewari, the grandfather of fire.
Mm-hmm. Grandfather of light. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And Takutsi Nakawe.
Uh-huh. Great. Wow, you're speaking perfectly.
Grandmother growth. And then
Yes. Then
Kaoyumari.
Mm-hmm. Kaoyumari.
That's our brother, the deer spirit.
Right. Who represents gentleness or peace.
And Tate Yurianaka.
Mm-hmm.
Mother Earth. Could you say it, please?
Yes, that was perfect.
Can you provide us deeper insight into the rituals and the devotional exercises to Grandfather Fire, Grandmother Growth, and the Deer Spirit and Mother Earth?
Well, first I'd like to just comment on, you mentioned my grandfather, Don Jose, and he was such a kind human being and such a beautiful person. You know, when you would see him, he would just seem like a very normal person. He would be sitting on the earth playing with his grandchildren or his great-grandchildren. He was on one hand, a very normal human being. He loved to grow corn, and he gathered firewood every day. And so he lived in this way till he was 110 years old. And he was very vibrant just because he felt he welcomed life, and he welcomed the joy of living. And so by being with him throughout my apprenticeship, I hopefully learned a little bit of this as well. And he always emphasized, for example, the light of Grandfather Fire, as you mentioned, Tatewari. And he said, well, we want to eat food, so we have to gather firewood. And he would take me out, and we would gather firewood. And he said, this is the practical part of our sacred fire. You feed the fire wood. And during my apprenticeship, he taught me over and over again that the power of the light, or the power of Grandfather Fire, is wisdom and knowledge. And that he said, we all carry that light, we all carry that knowledge inside of our bodies, inside of our soul, as we carry this light as knowledge or wisdom. And so he used to say, look inside of your heart to find answers, to find connection, as we've been talking about. And then you mentioned Tate Yurianaka. Well, that's Mother Earth, and her power is love. For the Huichols, love is a very real emotion, and it's real, tangible, you might say. Where love, we say, is the power of the earth. And so the Huichols try to feel that love of Mother Earth with each and every step that we take upon the altar of Mother Earth, Tate Yurianaka. And so love is something very real, and that's something also that people can use during this time of winter time, for example, if they're feeling low or lonely. They can walk, just a simple thing, like Mark was saying before. You take slow steps upon Mother Earth, and you feel her power, her love, coming into your body to help to heal your soul. And then knock away grandmother growth. Takutsi knock away. She's seen as the power of the water. And the water, we say, is also responsible for bringing beauty to the earth. So these are some of ideas that I have about what you just mentioned, Anthony.
Well, thank you so much. I really wanted the listeners to have a deeper understanding of the shamanism and the ideologies and philosophies of the Huichol people, because they are what have inspired Mark to be the six-time world champion that he is. Before I go a little bit into your story, Mark, because I really want to get into your heart. Brant, could you provide a ceremony to bless the body and spirit of the audience?
I could when we're off the air.
Thank you. But,
sure, I would like to do that. But basically what we do is to think good thoughts in a positive way. And so we can send that now to all the people and ask that the Great Spirit guide and bring a clear mind and a clear heart to all the audience that is happens to be listening now.
Thank you. You know, the audience is very aware of the interconnectedness of the past, present, and future, and that being you doing that off the air is the blessing shall be received, and we appreciate that so much.
Great, thank you, Anthony.
Mark.
Yes.
Your story, if you would share, when you were, what drove you to be a triathlete?
You know, there was no real logical reason that I went to the Ironman. I just happened to see it on Wide World of Sports in 1982. I was 24 years old. I'd been out of college for 2 years, and I didn't really have any life direction, but I was feeling the pressure, like, you know what, you need to get a real job. But I saw the Ironman on television, and I thought, I'm going to go to that, and it'll take, you know, it's 6 months from the time that I saw it, and I thought, at least for the next 6 months, I'll be training for this crazy thing, and I won't even have the time to think about what I'm going to do with the rest of my life. It was the best stall tactic ever. But then in that very first race, I saw that I actually maybe had the potential to do okay in the sport, if not be one of the better athletes. But that journey took a lot longer than I thought it would. And in the end, it was perfect because, like anything, those six races where I didn't win really taught me a lot about perseverance and just how to keep going even in the midst of absolute chaos or a race that isn't going the way you hope. And that's the way life is so many times. We have this ideal picture of how life should be, but sometimes you look around on any given day and you think, is this my life? Is this what I signed up for? But we got to keep going anyway. And that's really one of the great tools that Brant taught me. I mean, I could talk for days about the amazing teachings that he's given over the years, but one of the things that he says in almost every workshop is he emphasizes that it's not over until it's over. And he says this is something that the Huichol live by, meaning no matter how impossible something might look or seem to you in this moment, just take the next step, keep going, because in the next moment, things can turn around for you. And a lot of this comes down to a simple word that Brant emphasizes so many times, and it's the word trust. We have to trust in ourselves, in the Great Spirit, in the power of that love of Mother Earth to heal us when we're feeling down, or the power of the light to lift us up when we're sad or when we need strength to go beyond something that we don't feel like we can handle in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And that trust is something that I have found gets tested over and over and over. It's not like you know, okay, I'm going to trust today that everything's going to turn out, even though it looks kind of lousy right now. I might be tested again tomorrow and the next day and the day after that. And that's just life. But every time I have found that I hold on to that word trust, and Brand often says you can hold on to the image of a deer, because he says that's also a symbol of strength and trust. And he said every time you hold on like that, then it just carries you a little bit further in life. And what a great concept to feel like, today I went one step further in my life.
Your book, how Fit Soul, Fit Body, and the program, how is it different from any of the other fitness and self-help books out there?
Most books that we have seen, or all of them actually other than ours, tries to sort of separate the two themes of working your body, getting your body strong, or dealing with, let's say, your inner character, building up your emotional strength, or dealing with past pain or things that might be holding you back on an emotional or spiritual level. In our book, Fit Soul, Fit Body, we try to really emphasize that everything is intertwined and interconnected. You know, take, for example, somebody on a very physical level, you know, maybe they exercise and they get really fit, but they're not happy. Well, you have the numbers, you step on the scale and you weigh what you'd hope to lose, maybe you lost weight, your clothes fit better, but you're not happy. Well, there's an emotional component that maybe there's something inside that also needs to be worked on to be healed as well. And so we integrate the two themes together of Fit Soul, Fit Body in a way that is very practical, is very easy for people to identify with. Like Brant said, that power of love from the earth. Who on this planet hasn't experienced love and how great that can make you feel? Whether it's for a family member or maybe that sense of love that you feel when you see an amazing sunrise or sunset. I mean, that's incredible stuff. And that can transform you. And then when you have a better sort of inner environment, your soul feels happier, then you have the energy to take care of yourself a little better. You exercise more, you eat a little wiser. And as you do those things, then your body feels stronger, and it also propels your emotional state into a greater sense of well-being as well. And so it's all integrated, and it's almost a disservice to try and separate those two themes.
And something like love can actually give physical power to the body. If you feel in love with nature or your environment, it can help you walk longer or run better, or whatever it is that we're doing, going for a bike ride. It's very simple, but I always tell people, don't be fooled by the simplicity of these teachings.
So what do you think are the best ways to... Before I ask this question, I was... We like dirt, you know, seeds... Plants need dirt. They need that stress and the funk and the nastiness in order to really emerge and to become the beauty that they are within. Why is stress such an integral component to life?
Well, I wish we had an easy answer for that one. But stress is a natural part, or it's a natural reaction to some of the challenges that come before us. And so by dealing with, nothing is really bad. It's how we react to a certain situation. So if stress comes up, we can react to it in somewhat of a positive way, and therefore the stress will dissolve. Don Jose used to say it'll go up like smoke and disappear.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think are the best ways to conquer stress or to deal with it?
Well, we emphasize in the book one way would be to connect with the spiritual world of nature, to go out and watch a sunrise, go out and watch a sunset, just look at a flower and see the beautiful colors and how those colors help to make our spirit or our soul bright just by looking at them. And these are ways that we can very, very simply deal with the emotion of stress or depression. And this is what an Indian would do in the middle of the wilderness, or what we can do here in the middle of the modern world. And I think we talk about that at length in the book, how, you know, to connect with the spiritual world of nature, or to learn to give up anger, fear, jealousy. And when we do these things, we are therefore, we could say, inherently giving away these negative emotions that are holding us back from who we truly are.
And then on a fit body level, very simple thing is to go outside and just walk for 5 minutes or 10 minutes. There's something about moving our bodies, whether it's, you know, jogging, swimming, running, just simply walking to the end of the block and back. It helps shift that stress response in our bodies, and it helps calm everything down. People always ask me, how long should I exercise? And the first thing I say is, exercise long enough until your attitude changes. And that's something that I use every single day. You know, I'll work until I reach that point where I say, that's all I can take right now. And then I will go outside for a 5-minute walk, 10-minute walk, or, you know, maybe a 30-minute run, whatever it is, and then come back, and I feel like I've started the day all over, fresh as a daisy.
Yes. In your book, you mentioned that our generation, like my children, for example, won't live as long as, or have the same lifespan as I do. What do you think has brought this on? This is not good.
Well, I think there's so many chemicals now in the world and that were not there before. And I think we're being affected by them adversely. And so hopefully, though, science and will come up with a solution that can help us combat this, so that people will live long and healthy lives.
And I think, you know, when that gets combined with the stress that people are experiencing a lot of times in the modern world, and the inactivity that people are in the lifestyles, you know, people have to work so many hours now just to survive that there's very little time left over to actually take care of your physical body. And, you know, when you're 20, you look in the mirror, and if you're not exercising, you still look great. But when you're 55 or 60, if you haven't exercised your whole life, you see there's a different story going on. And so I agree with Brandt that probably first and foremost is the chemicals in the environment, but then also our lifestyles has led to a sort of a challenge when it comes to longevity and living really healthy to the end.
And we, Mark and I, believe, you know, we're still very filled with hope. And we believe that if people practice a fit soul and fit body lifestyle, that they can live a very long and healthy life.
Well, in your book, you do say that one of the keys is to slow down to get faster. That sounds like a contradiction to me.
Well, Don Jose, he lived to be 110 years old. And until he was 108, he was very vibrant, very strong. And then we used to tease him, well, I guess now you finally got old. But he lived to be 110 practicing that lifestyle. He wouldn't run around, but he would walk steadily. And he just believed in connecting with his world, with his environment. You know, his world started with his family, with his children, with his grandchildren, and with nature. And he was a very normal person on one hand, and it's helped him to live a long life just by being in touch in a very, you might say, normal way, practical way with his world.
And on a physical level, if somebody's exercising at a very intense level, which is the way a lot of people feel they have to get any benefit out of exercising, that's actually setting up a response in our body that in ancient times was a signal that we were in danger. And that's a high stress state for the body. So if somebody's going out and they're running at top speed all the time, their body is thinking that they're being chased by a saber-toothed tiger. It's not saying, I'm getting a good workout. And so when we say slow down to get faster, if we can actually slow down our exercise and also sort of adopt that as a mindset of how we approach everything in life, then we actually do things in a way that's truly beneficial for us. If we do exercise at a more moderate level, that is a type of, that's when we get the response in the body where all the feel-good hormones